Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
One.
Rolling.
Yep, we're rolling.
We are rolling. Well, I tell you, do you know what? I'm going to suggest, before just when we even start, we'll get into our normal theme tune, but I'm going to suggest that maybe for Six Nations weeks in the future, this could potentially be an alternative theme tune, because I think this sums up how we feel about this whole period. Sorry, there we go. I'm going to play it now.
What is this?
It's the most wonderful time.
I love the Six Nations so much.
The great Dave Damashak has that song with the most football-y time of the year for the playoffs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, love it. Well, absolutely love it.
Super Bowl tonight as well, of course.
Shall we talk about the Super Bowl in the pod? We might have it. Or should we put that in the... No, we'll have to talk about it in this pod because... Yeah. By then it'll be Thursday and it'll be well over.
Well, there is a good reason why it would be relevant this week to talk about
actually.
Super Bowl. So we'll get into that in a little bit. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's get on with the podcast and then. But let's just start with hands in.
Okay.
Pod on three.
Metaphorical hands in. Pod on three. One, two, three.
Pod.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We're just three mates that love the game and talk about it with you every week. This week, twice, because we will be doing this podcast, the Six Nations Focus Podcast, and on Wednesday we will have the Midweek Domestic Podcast, looking forward to the Aviva Premiership Pro 12 and all the other stuff that also goes on during the Six Nations. I'm Tim, that is JB.
Hello, Tim.
Philip is there in a French, lovely French shirt.
Hello, Tim.
We are the Egg Chasers. We are the original rugby podcast, the podcasting trailblazers in the world of rugby. We are often imitated. We are never bettered. It started at a kitchen table and we continue 52 weeks of the year.
That's a good point. Do you remember the first ever podcast?
Yeah, I do.
Like, it didn't even involve Phil. I mean, the good old days, as I like to call it. in Tim's attic.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no, that was never heard. No that one ever heard of that one.
I didn't even know that existed.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, then we had the kitchen table.
I wonder if that's on my computer at home. Because if
I could dig that.
We could do that for an anniversary or something.
Oh, no, I'd hate to listen to that.
Yeah, thinking how bad we were for the first year or so, I think it would be a terrible idea to drag that up.
We do it 52 weeks a year without any financial incentive, without any television or radio or newspaper platform pushing us, without any reliance on big names, quote unquote. It is only fueled...
I'm a pretty big deal.
JB is now immortal thanks to the JB Cup.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
More news on that later.
Yes. We're only fueled by a total, unending, pure love of rugby union. And it continues for and because of you. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you for contributing. Find us at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Find us on Facebook, Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. That's where we're broadcasting live right now, but you can watch the video back of us in the rugby dungeon having a little bit of a natter. Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast on Facebook. We are on iTunes, and thank you very much for leaving your reviews. Would you like to hear?
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
Bobby Yo, 5-star review, says, not enough Sail Sharks coverage.
Agreed. You're not the only one Bobby thinks that.
Possibly ironic. Desai89 says... Top podcast for those who love the game, love rugby banter. As entertaining as hearing Eddie Butler pronounce the names of French rugby players. Well, we didn't get to hear that this weekend. And says Springbok or Nazi war criminal changed his life. And a final review from ABG0201 says Crisptastic. Outstanding podcast if you're at all confused about the tonal implications regarding potato-based snacks. Yeah, that relates to a conversation we had last week about the colour of crisp packets. I've actually done a little bit of research on this one, because we were talking about it being confusing that some companies have salt and vinegar as green,
would
some
like
blue.
A crisp, Tim?
A crisp?
Yeah, I've got some crisps here.
Do you have some crisps?
Yeah, I've got some crisps.
I'll have a crisp, yeah.
Now, you know...
What colours are brown packets? So I'm going to guess that's like roast beef, is it?
Oh, well done, yeah. It's crispy chili beef. Now, we're not sponsored by these guys, but Co-op Speciality Crisps. The irresistible ones. Outrageously good.
So Tato in Ireland, this is what I was pointing out. It's like, yes, Walkers versus Golden Wonder, like salt and vinegar green, salt and vinegar blue, whatever. Tato in Ireland, I've done a little bit more research on this one. Mm-hmm. This is what I understand it to be the case. Cheese and onion in Southern Ireland, the Republic, red.
Cheese and onion red?
Cheese and onion red. In Northern Ireland, cheese and onion Tatos are yellow.
Wow.
Now, I get that one, because cheese is kind of yellow.
Yeah.
It's no and wonder there's been...
White onions are yellowish.
Yeah, I guess so. It's no wonder, is it, there's been years of political strife. it all stacks up now.
Right, well, on this podcast, we're going to be talking about the first round of the Six Nations matches. Wales, were they unshackled, or did Italy simply run out of steam? England, they won ugly. France, were their green shoots of recovery? Ireland, were they off the boil, or do we give all credit to a tenacious Scotland? We'll have a moan about refs, no doubt. Some orgasmic groans about Sergio and King Louis, and who knows what other twists and turns. Even we don't know at this point. Where would you like to start?
Chronologically, let's go. Actually, do you want to do that? Because that is the best game.
Well,
let's start with best first.
There you go. Yeah, it was. It certainly was the best game.
Scotland, Ireland, then.
Yes.
All right.
What a way to kick off the Six Nations 2017.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We said last week it was going to be a hell of a fixture. We all struggled to pick a winner, but I think I'm right in saying we all suspected that Ireland might do it.
Yeah, I thought they would.
Yeah.
I thought it would be too strong. It's only the third time since the Six Nations changed from being the Five Nations that Scotland have beaten Ireland in Murrayfield.
And 5 minutes into the game, before either of the first two Scotland tries, when there was two scrimmages that the Irish pack decimated the Scotland pack. Mm. I was thinking, this is going to be a long old day for the Scottish boys.
Yeah, can I just make a point about props? Now, it was I only saw this guy for a little while. I don't really know much about him prior to this game, but Dell,
the loose head.
He's in good shape, isn't he?
Yeah,
like,
really good shape.
He looks in good nick.
I'm starting to think, right, that the new hunks of rugby might actually start being the props, because.
Max Lahiff, the shape.
Yeah, exactly. You want that unusually buff guy, it's going to be prop or hooker.
Like Kean Healy's in exactly. Ridiculous shape as well.
And McGrath.
Yeah.
So that's my call, because all these other guys are starting to get a little bit too athletic now.
We want to draw the line at props being able to go on Love Island. We don't want to get there. We do not want to get there. Which is why I don't condone Max Lahiff as a prop.
This guy, he's a bit of a unit.
Yeah.
But he also didn't scrimmage particularly well.
No, he didn't.
Those first two especially were so dominant from the Irish pack. Very impressive.
Can I play you something we were tweeted?
Yeah, of course.
This is on RTE.
Yes.
So this is a television. Yeah. As the players were just being presented to Her Majesty the Princess of Scotland.
Princess Anne.
Yeah.
And the Irish commentary team, including Ronan O'Gara, were giving their thoughts ahead of the game.
If Scotland defend like they defend in the top 14 and they're allowed to do whatever they want at mall time, advantage Scotland in terms of that. But if it's policed correctly, Ireland will gain penalties. I thought going into the game, Ireland have a better scrum, a better mall, and I think that they'd be hopefully mentally stronger than them.
Right, so far so good, yeah?
Yeah,
fairly unbiased. Yeah,
I like it, yeah.
Definitely.
For what it's worth, I feel I hope Ireland hammered them today because of the way Scotland behaved during the week.
Right.
Wow, what do they do during the week?
Was this all the Conor Murray stuff bubbling on? Like the standing leg tackles and stuff.
I'm guessing it's a Glasgow thing, right?
I've not seen anything more than that.
No, I know. So now he's like his partisan. And again, I don't mind partisan pundits. No. That's absolutely fine. I suppose I would always warn partisan pundits, careful you don't end up with egg on your face. Let's have a listen yes. to what Ronan O'Gara says next.
I think too mouthy, but they can't back it up, I think.
Oh, right, here we go. Sorry, I missed that.
Nice.
Too mouthy. I think too mouthy, but they can't back it up, I think.
There you go. Ronan O'Gara saying, before kickoff, Scotland are too mouthy, but they can't back it up.
Wow.
Awkward.
You're talking. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
That's awkward, isn't it?
Then 20 minutes in, they're 2-0 up. 2 Stuart Hogg tries.
Right, yeah. So that first Stuart Hogg try, I think, was pure luck. I really do. Because Finn Russell throws that ball, I think 35 yards.
It was a very long. It was like a double or possibly a triple miss.
Yeah.
Where Ringrose.
I'm not entirely sure what he was trying to do.
Well, he reads it. And so he sprints to where he's expecting the ball to be. Mm-hmm. But because you can't throw a 35 yard miss pass, triple miss pass, it bounces just before. If that ball was in the air the whole way, Ringrose would have intercepted it and gone 95 yards and scored.
Exactly.
But because he can't throw that pass, it bounces before Ringrose and just skids up perfectly.
But where do you imagine that pass was meant to go? That's my thing. Because it's so far away from the... Unless he was trying to hit the winger on that wrap.
There was, yeah.
That's the only thing I
was
could possibly
think of. Was it Maitland or Seymour were coming round, weren't they?
Yeah, otherwise It is the luckiest try. And the only thing which would surpass it is if Wales scored. You know, Jonathan Davis knock-on when he kicks it over.
Yeah,
That's the only one that would be really luckier and worse.
Knocks it on, but Grubber kicks it over the line at the same time.
Having said that, his second try was excellent.
Oh, his second try was marvellous. When he breaks through one-on-one with Carney. Well, yeah. It's the two-on-one with Carney, effectively. And he shows the dummy for Carney.
Just a quick one. Is that Carney's... Lions chances gone along with the dummy.
So when he bought the dummy, he sold his Lions chances.
Correct. That's exactly right. Because he still moves well. He still looks really good.
Hard to say. Fullback will be a very interesting position. Hogg has to be nailed on.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Hogg
We'll do a segment later where we'll have our Lions watch and we'll just wildly go flip from one way to the other based on just the 80 minutes performance rather than looking at it but he was already coming into this as the total incumbent nailed on number one, and he only strengthened that case.
Can I widen
if it was possible
this
to strengthen it
discussion a little more by saying we spoke in midweek, didn't we, about some of the older lads maybe not being quite up to it or not being up to it but maybe there's better people pushing for their positions. Carney was mentioned, Heaslip was mentioned.
Yeah.
I do struggle to think that Keith Earls is one of the best two wingers in all of Ireland.
Yeah, I do know what you mean.
And I didn't think him and Ringrose looked... That little combination looked really weak.
Yeah, I would agree. I kind of felt they were missing Jarrod Payne.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point.
From his... He's not the attacking player that Ringrose potentially is, but in close games like this, Payne is so solid
It's easy to talk with hindsight, but who would you like to have seen playing? Because I'm going to say I would have picked the same team that went out there just because of what they achieved in Chicago. And also, you've got to remember that international teams are becoming more like club teams now, so you can't just change the players.
I think you put a dominant Irish pack that managed to assert their physicality on the game, and suddenly a player like Ringrose looks way better. I just thought that the combination between the two on Earls and Ringrose together it looked like a bit of a weak link. But I would say it was up front that the game was won.
Well, it's interesting because so Ireland's scrum were completely dominant,
and on that front we'll talk about lines up and down. But Ferguson was great around the park, but he got absolutely pumped by Jack McGrath.
Well, yeah, I mean,
and then Kean Healy.
Yeah, and Nell's a huge loss as well. Because if Nell's there, it's a different game.
But Ireland's completely dominant there. Line-out was shaky, though, for Ireland.
Yeah, it was a little bit. But where I thought the difference in the packs were Was it the breakdown?
Exactly. Well, like Glasgow, watching the way Glasgow it's kind hammered of like, that breakdown. They're just ruthless.
It's sort of like guerrilla warfare, isn't it? You're not very good at the set piece, but you make a nuisance of yourself in every other aspect.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Conor Murray couldn't really get into the game.
Yeah, they were really disrupting it. And they gave a couple of penalties away because of it, Scotland.
Mm.
But they were so disruptive and so abrasive.
It did incredibly unnecessary for Ireland to give away two penalties within kicking range.
Well, they still only gave away five penalties five or six penalties in the whole game, which is incredibly
low. It
shows
how stupid it is, actually, to give away those two so late on when you're so disciplined.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in video analysis, that's going to come back to haunt them.
Well, yeah.
A very, very miserable morning.
But they just had all the things which worked really well against New Zealand: massive physicality at the breakdown, incredible line speed and dominance in defence, managing to catch players behind the gain line. They didn't manage to get that.
I've been thinking recently. Okay, this is one of the things that I think about. With all the players, how hard do you think it must be if you are, say, 33, still playing international, to have that level of physicality with so many young players? I can't imagine how tough it would be. Because as you get older, you do tend to chill out a bit more.
No, I don't think. I think you have to have that competitive edge. To be knowing a few people who've played at very high level, it's the competitive edge. It's not wanting to be outdone or beaten at anything at all.
I think a lot of the guys retire, well, obviously because of injury, but second to that, just because they can't get up for that physical battle anymore.
I think it would be more the kind of drag, the 7 day slog of
exactly
getting up
that
at 6 a.m.
eating
five times a day, eating 5,000 calories a day to stay at 18 plus stone.
5,000 calories isn't that big deal.
Depends what you're eating, I guess. If you're eating pizzas and McDonald's, it's easy to hit 5,000 calories.
So there was some kind of conditioning scientist work that was done. They probably come up with something different, but they basically said to achieve potential that your body can, it's a full 10 years consistent work to achieve the level that your body can over, 10 years, which... But now, I suppose, you're getting incredibly developed gym monkeys aged 18. And so that 10-year period is being achieved a lot earlier. So I think the average age of internationals may drop slightly, but...
I think they're going to increase. Well,
yeah, there's two sides, isn't there? There's a physical side, but that is only 40% of it, because you've got to have the mental side as well.
I think flankers, wingers, are going to retire earlier.
Like running backs in American football.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly
yeah,
right.
I can see that.
Halfbacks, not maybe scrum half, but definitely fly half, and props are going to keep on going for longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, props and always have, haven't they?
Locks, yeah.
And to an extent, centres as well.
Yeah, anything you need explosive power for.
Less the centres who, like a Fofana or a Fiku type centre, but more the kind of controlling centre. So less Jamie Roberts, more Scott Williams.
Yes, agreed. Although... Yeah. Jamie Roberts has never been fast. I mean, if you're just a bulky fella.
No, but it's the wear and tear on his body, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's physicality is his game. It's not fast, but it's the physicality.
I can't imagine how much that man must hurt the morning after an international.
Have I got this right? I saw a stat that said Johnny Gray made another 28 tackles for Scotland.
I'll tell you now. He was on 24 when the game was still going on.
Wow.
But while you're finding that out, surely that makes Scotland unofficial world champions now.
27.
27, was it? Unofficial world champs. Because Ireland beat New Zealand.
No,
Scotland beat Ireland.
No, sorry, Tim.
Rayburn Shield, New Zealand won it back 2 weeks later.
Well, I know that. But,
Yeah, you're quite right.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean...
And then Scotland lost to Italy last year, didn't they? Was it last year they lost to Italy? Or was it going back
it was last year or 2 years ago, yeah.
Yeah,
that means Italy are unofficial world champs.
Yeah,
which means Wales are.
Well, hang on. Well, on Tonga, unofficial.
Yeah,
world
Tonga. Yeah.
So yeah, depending on how as long as you ignore the linear sequence of matches, you can make anyone world champion.
Well, everyone is. Every team that's beaten Italy.
Yeah,
which is a lot of teams.
It stacks up all right.
Yeah.
Anything else about this game?
Right. If you were going to do a Clive Woodward flip chart. Session,
okay, right.
Which he didn't do, incidentally, on ITV. It was disappointing.
What?
I know. You didn't get the flip chart. Oh. But if you were going to do that, and like, right, so you were Fern Cotton, or you were Joe Schmidt. Let's talk about the Joe Schmidt one. What do you change? What do you tinker with? What do you focus on?
So, for me, it was interesting to see the success that they had when they played New Zealand and when they played Australia and when they've won it the last couple of years. They have been good with ball in hand, but only when they get in the right areas, this island. They've kicked a lot, and they've kicked intelligently for territory and possession. They didn't do that this weekend. They didn't kick a huge amount, and I wonder if that was a conscious decision because they were playing with Paddy Jackson rather than Sexton. Yeah. But it meant that they did run a lot, and they ran 200 plus more metres, and they beat almost three times as many. Sorry. More than three times as many defenders as Scotland did.
Mm.
But they were doing it from further out. So they didn't win that... they didn't earn the right to play rugby. They played rugby before earning the right. And I think, particularly given the result, that would be something that Schmidt would look to change.
I'm going to say something relatively stupid now. I think I would like to see him build the running game more around CJ Stander. And maybe less around Sean O'Brien and Jamie Heaslip. The reason I say that is I think Sean O'Brien is such a unique talent that if you build something around him and it doesn't come off, and quite often it doesn't, you're sort of stuck. I think they'd be better off with some more conventional sevens or maybe sevens which aren't quite as talented, so you're not relying on that running game. And maybe Heaslip just isn't quite up to it anyway. I mean, no, that isn't fair. I would just like to change the balance of the back row a bit. Also, if you're going to kick, who else would you want in that team other than the guy who's under everything high? Andrew Conway. If there's something, guaranteed, if there's something in the air, that man is underneath it. Guarantee you.
Well, it will be interesting to see, because obviously Tommy Bowe was on the bench, and Tommy Bowe is fairly handy at the high ball as well.
He is. Yeah, no, but he's not very good. I don't mean at catching it. I mean just being under, no matter where it goes and where it's kicked. He is underneath the ball.
Can I make one observation about this game as well? I'll play you something else. So, no, in fact, I'll save this for a little segment on talking about the different broadcasters and how we felt about them. And I'll wait.
Okay. Just on your back row shift, what would you change? Who would you bring in?
I think one of the young Leinster lads, maybe. I think
someone
maybe
like someone Van der Fleer.
Yeah, maybe Peter Amani.
Is that because you almost want to take out one of the ball carriers?
Well, they are very heavy with ball carriers there. And I know Sean O'Brien does other things too. I just kind of... I don't trust him to consistently play well. I know that Leinster don't... I mean, they do play him in big games, but Leinster function perfectly well without him also.
But they do function, but he's such a good player. They've had to function because he's been so injury-prone for the last few years.
And also, he's not really... I mean, who is the seven who's closest to him?
Well, he's really a six that they're playing as a seven.
Yeah.
CJ Stander is the player in the Six Nations who's closest to
England,
Sean O'Brien.
England,
that's a very good point.
England are doing that.
I think...
But the England back row, I mean, if they get the players that they want, we'll talk about this later, they're not big ball carriers. They are hard. They're just hard grafters. I think
I think England, as most other teams, are just getting their best players out on the pitch. So Haskell, Robshaw, Billy, which is their preferred choice, is their best players. It's exactly the same as Stander, Heaslip, O'Brien. They are their best
three backs.
I'm going with Phil. I don't think it's a revolution or ripping up anything.
No, I think they need more balance.
It's just actually, why aren't you using the blueprint that served you so well for the last year?
I think Phil's right. I think kicking the ball is probably... No, definitely more important.
Yeah,
but I think the back row does need to be rebalanced.
Balanced. Yeah, I can understand the balance thing, but I'm not sure I would change anything just because they are so good. And Sean O'Brien on his day does everything, does absolutely everything. He'll hit every ruck, hit every tackle, and carry for dozens and dozens of yards.
We talked about Hogg. We should briefly just say fair play, Sean Maitland, who came to Scotland's rescue a couple of times defensively.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
right,
the cover tackle on Carney.
There's something about Saracens kind of bringing out the best in what players that could potentially be mediocre or could potentially be international class, and Saracens kind of squeeze that out of them.
I think the opposite of Maitland. I think he could be one of the world's great wingers. I mean, physically, he's up there, but he just doesn't quite seem to cut loose. He's so nearly there, but not quite.
We spoke about this when we were watching the game. defensively, I'm completely with Tim. Yep. I think now he's more solid than he's ever been. Offensively, I agree with you. I think offensively, he looks to cut back inside, or he doesn't
so
back
strong,
himself.
He's so powerful.
Yeah. There was a couple of times in that game where he gets the ball on the outside, and instead of just pinning his ear back, go for the fend, if you're being pushed into tuck, rubber through, he half went for it and then cut back inside into traffic. You'd be screaming, no, no.
Exactly. And he does all the time. Do you remember how annoyed he was last year not to be picked for Scotland?
I remember talking to him first week in March. Yep.
Right, I'll tell you what, I'm going to segue, before we get into another game, I'm just going to ask you your thoughts on, I'm going to get into this.
Cornerstone?
I was just going to, this actually links in with it. Nice.
Go on, then.
I'll get to that, JB, I'll get to that. But no, what did you think of the different broadcasters? We had the BBC and we had ITV.
Oh, I particularly liked Ronan O'Gara's coverage for RTE.
Yeah.
That's... Oh, yeah, of course, there's that one as well. If you're,
I think ITV knocked spots off him, personally. I don't think it was even close. There are some pundits, and I'm certain of this, they just mail it in. They don't do their research. They don't do anything. I tend to feel that is the case with the BBC. And I thought the ITV pundits were far, far better. Far better.
It was quite good having Paul O'Connell.
Paul O'Connell, his insight is brilliant. Because he talks about...
He talks very slowly about...
He does talk very slowly. That's the thing. So his insight is brilliant, and his experience, he's recalling experience that was not 18 months old when he was last in the World Cup, which is his last involvement. But he does sound a little bit bored.
Yeah, to be fair...
Well, I would if I was probably hanging out with... No, I'm joking. No, one criticism. Sorry, you were going to say something, JB.
Yeah, no, so I was referring more to the in-match commentary.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm taking it as a whole. Mm. Personally, I would happily tolerate the adverts for
the
ITV.
Corporate adverts given to the broadcasters by people in suits. Are you sure?
Absolutely.
That's very un-Tim.
Absolutely. I thought there were some great adverts in the ITV one. I enjoyed the Bradley Wiggins advert.
Bradley Wiggins Skoda one was good.
That's very good. Very cinematic. And there was a really good one that George North was involved in, Jim Telfer and stuff, which was Gillette. Although
I've not seen that one.
Yeah, I guess
making a brew.
It looks quite a well-made advert. Although it's a bit of a sham because George North is obviously just taking the dollar, and going, "Yeah, I use Gillette, but we know better, right?"
Exactly right.
We know better.
It really strikes another HIA for me. Yeah. For George North.
Poor George.
I agree. He doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know what razor he's using. He just You got a knock on the door and someone at Gillette says, "Oh, you use Gillette, George." Oh, okay. All right. Right, say that now. And they had cameras there, doorstepped him.
They probably just ripped the Cornerstone razor out of his hand.
Exactly. We know George uses Cornerstone. That's why he looks so fresh-faced and chiselled, his jawline, when he played for Wales against Italy. So, yeah, if you want, like George North, to have a Cornerstone razor, then you could get one. With your own free engraved aluminium shaft, engraved with your initials, come delivered to you in a beautiful presentation box with six wonderful new razors and any other supplements you want from as little as £4, with also, as I say, your free shaft from Cornerstone, which is, fact, the best razor on the market. Gillette can spend millions on their adverts, but they can't claim to be the best razor in its class. Cornerstone is voted for in GQ Awards above Wilkinson Sword, above Gillette. So get the best. Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or
Egg10 at checkout.
Right. I'm going to play something because this is a source of massive frustration for all fans of all other nations except for England. And that is the fact that that have to watch have their rugby through the BBC and ITV, that is. And I think I'm going to start doing a little competition through the Six Nations on which broadcaster in the games England aren't involved in mentions England first. And Hugo Monier mentioned England with his first sentence today as pundit for Wales v Italy.
Yeah.
BBC won this race. Check out how many seconds into the whole programme before England got a mention. This is BBC Ireland v Scotland. Here we go, starting now.
By by trains and boats and planes. They've come from all over Ireland, buoyed by that autumn victory over the All Blacks, and thinking this could be the year of a Grand Slam showdown against England.
I made that 11 seconds.
Wow.
Who had 11 seconds before England get a mention? They just, everyone seems desperate to talk about England. I know there's more of us Englishmen watching than anyone else, and you've got to kind of, you know, keep people interested. But I can understand why other nations get a bit frustrated as well.
Yes.
Yeah. I've got something else. Sorry, I've got another broadcaster. We've gone to RTE. Let me take you to a different broadcaster. I'm terribly sorry about this. Carry on. I'm trying to think of what something else to talk
about. Is
this
the French one?
Yes. It's.
I've not seen this.
It's a French. All right. Do you know what? I will find it. What game should we go on to next?
Well, England France.
Yeah.
Let's chronological.
Chronological.
I think there's a lot to take out of this. There's an awful lot, and I think England might have got more than a bit lucky. Actually,
England did get a bit lucky.
Oh yeah. Okay. Oh, here we go. Sorry. No, this because I'll just tie this loose end off. And this ties into this French team covering Italy, Wales today, French broadcaster. And do you remember when Gary Neville commentated on that Fernando Torres goal and had a bit of an orgasm? Mm-hmm. This is a. There you go.
Now, who was commentating on that game?
For France?
Yeah.
I've no idea.
Because. No, not the French guys. Was that an ITV one? Was that?
Yeah, it was ITV.
Someone said.
Flatman.
Someone
Flatman
said
and Nick Mullins.
I'm sure
France, the France.
I'm
England.
Sure I've listened to BBC. I'm sure BBC commentary for that.
It was
as well.
It was Nick Mullins.
Flats.
One of them.
And I feel like I should know the other one.
I'm sure I've heard the BBC version of that because one of them, I think it's Eddie Butler. I'm sure that there's BBC version of it. Said Slamani. No, hang on. What's his name?
Slimani.
Slimani.
Yeah.
When it was Chocky that scored, but went outrageously French, as if he'd queued it up, as if he.
But it was Slimani who scored.
Oh, was Chocky the next one?
Next what?
No, I thought Chocky scored.
No, Slimani scored.
Xavier Chocky scored.
No, Slimani scored.
Oh, there you are then. I'm completely wrong.
What? So you were listening to this commentary on BBC?
Yeah, because I watched the highlights on the BBC website.
Oh, okay.
Hang on, I thought it was. Xavier
Chocky. It was Mullins, Delalio, Flatman.
Delalio, yes, and Flatman.
Someone very, very French. Anyway, let's talk about the game as well. Are you absolutely sure it was Slimani?
Yes, it was.
Is that fake news?
Alternative fact, right there.
Yeah, there's an alternative fact right there.
Right, Phil. I'm going to start the England France chat. Yes, we'll get onto all the good things about France, and they were good. And England had an off day, and Eddie Jones was quite right to say England won ugly. It was ugly, but a wonderful result. Just, I mean, when we were talking last week about England's potential hero, the name that we put forward was Owen Farrell.
Yep.
And that guy is the beating heart of that England team. He's just an incredible character of the guy. I absolutely love him.
Yeah, I do as well.
Except for yesterday.
Well, no, especially yesterday when he was doing that suicide run on King Louis to tackle him.
That was an impressive tackle, yeah. Actually. He got handed off by Spedding. badly once.
Yeah. Yes, he got very badly handed off.
And he was targeted for a lot. I thought he was very quiet, particularly with ball in hand, because he was targeted. They were shooting out of the line. It was normally one of the centres, Fiku or Lamarat, along with one of the back rows, and they would just target him. So he was getting man and ball every time and no opportunity to spread it. So I thought it was a quiet game for him.
But the comparisons to Johnny Wilkinson, you can draw those lines without a doubt. The heartbeat of the team, the defensive rock for the team. He's happy to put his shoulder on and.
I don't think defensively he's quite as impactful. I think he's very competent, but I think Johnny was dominant, which is a difference. I also think that yesterday he was showing up a little bit in the inside centre, but I'd still pick him every day of the week.
Oh, 100%.
Particularly at 10.
100%.
Oh, yeah.
But he was playing, particularly for that first half. He's playing inside centre on a pack that was struggling to win its own ball. Yep. They kept knocking it on, kept giving penalties away, and with a nine who seemed in obsessed with giving slow, awkward passes. So it was made difficult for him.
We always talk about we hope players can carry their club form into international rugby. We sort of hope the reverse is true for Ben Youngs.
Exactly.
But he has done.
I thought, there's two areas of the England team which were of interest to me. First were the wings. I mean, those two wings, if you just lined them up and said, what does that one do? You go, it runs fast. And what does that one do? It does everything else.
It works incredibly hard.
Yeah. I thought Elliot Daly... I mean, I think he might be an absolute superstar come next couple of years.
He was brilliant. Oh. He was absolutely brilliant. He had one where they broke in the first half and he tried to kick over the top and kick straight into touch.
Yeah.
But besides that, everything he did very, very well.
He slammed that kick over. He just nailed it.
With no Ponzi pre-kick routine or anything like that. No big arena.
Yeah, I'll put that ball on that tee and I'll kick it over those posts.
Yeah,
from where? Anywhere.
There's something very old school that I really like about that.
Oh,
just a really nice clean strike of the ball with no pretense.
Allegedly, they've limited his kicking practice at Wasps.
Yeah.
Because he kicks it so hard. He just kicks it really, really hard.
They're worried about a stress fracture in his foot.
Yeah, if he's going to be an actual hero, I think Johnny May is slowly turning into a cult hero. I don't understand how this guy plays international rugby. I mean, you think he's consistently world class?
I've never said that.
You said that. What did you say? Consistently?
I said he's consistently good, and he has world class moments. You repeatedly say he's consistently world class.
I've never said he's consistently world class.
No, you just said it then. Phil, you just said it then.
Phil, don't worry. We're going to get on to things JB has said, and... an egg on his face long.
It was a glorious moment when Johnny May ran sideways across the pitch. I mean, it was like watching school rugby. Where's he going?
Under his own posts as well.
Yeah.
He's
some character.
Friend of the pod CJ said that is the most Johnny May thing he's ever seen.
Johnny
May
said
do.
That.
Or did you say that?
Yeah. That was incredibly Johnny May-ish. I mean, it just tells me how good he must be on the ball. That you can tolerate that sort of scrummaging. I mean, the scrummaging tells me everything that I need to know. Because as a professional rugby player who does nothing but rugby, how does he not know? And then the running across the pitch sideways, it's marvellous.
I know, let's keep it on the positives. And I know you...
that is a positive, mate. That is a massive positive.
Yeah, no, I know. So I'm saying, let's keep it on the positives. So I know you hate this music, but...
Hold on. What is that?
Hold on.
Oh, we've not had this for a while.
Thankfully. I know you hate this music, but let's talk about King Louis. Oh.
How does he do it?
Oh, what a guy.
Just an orthodox... He's incredibly naturally talented. I mean, what he does, you can't coach.
If I was a French man, or just anyway, I'd, you know, we all want to go hiking up a mountain, pitch a tent, go fishing... ride bareback on horses up a mountain with Louis Picamore. Special man. Special man.
What a performance.
Yeah.
I felt bad. Almost. As an Englishman, I almost felt bad that France lost just because of King Louis. It's his birthday today as well.
Do you know that?
He's 31 today.
Do you have the stats for King Louis?
I certainly do.
Far away.
So, he beat... more than twice as many defenders as the whole England pack, and he carried for 50 yards more than the entire England pack.
Quite incredible.
he alone was incredible.
Well, the learn from this, you were talking about Ireland maybe are imbalanced and have too many ball carriers. It just shows what an unbelievable difference a lack of Benny... Well, both the Vunipolas, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Nathan Hughes played well. He had a solid game and he carried hard, but... he's no Billy. He's no King Louis.
Well, he's no Billy and Mako and
yeah.
the two of them together.
Well, that was my second area of concern, really, was the England back row. I think they miss Rob Shaw an incredible amount.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I assumed you were going to go, oh, they miss Haskell loads.
Oh, I think they miss both, to be fair.
They do, but Rob Shaw, the unseen work that he does...
And the link play, I always refer to this with Rob Shaw.
Yeah.
There's no one else in that forward pack who has just even decent sympathetic hands.
Yeah, you're right.
Is it too early to call Rob Shaw the new Richard Hill? Lots of unseen work.
Yeah, well,
Richard
Hill was the starting player for the Lions. He won a World Cup. He was recognised. I'm so fearful that Robshaw's going to miss out on the Lions again, and someone like Haskell will go. That's not to denigrate Haskell, but I'm kind of with Phil. He's so important, and he's had such an incredible. Think back to November 2015 after the World Cup. And the way that the year and a half he's had since, or year and a half he'll have had by the end of the Six Nations, if he doesn't get on that Lions plane, I'll be absolutely devastated for him. He deserves
it. Well, the injury, I think, is going to cost him. Because if he doesn't get on the field for the Six Nations,
I don't think he will.
Yeah, he's got a huge, huge battle.
So if you take Gatland on his word, which he said, the Six Nations and the latter stage of European rugby will be where he decides his Lions team, then Robshaw won't be doing any of that.
Yep, because he's not in European rugby either.
But I would hope that he's already built up enough credit.
But you know what the problem is with both of these guys? It's the opposite to Sean O'Brien. They don't do anything particularly flashy. And that's the problem with Sean O'Brien. He does too much stuff flashy, so you can't really say...
You can't fuck him.
Yeah.
It's so difficult to overlook... a seven who's going to make 50 yards a game in heavy traffic.
It's like Miles Benjamin. always doing those bits of hard work which no one ever appreciates him for.
That's it. People always think that wingers are there to score tries. They're not. They're there to win ball at ruck time.
Yes. Exactly right. Secure the wide challenge.
Right, so come on then. Let's get the flip chart back out and... Let's be Eddie Jones. We're going to sit down on Monday morning with a cup of coffee. We're going to watch the game again, and then we're going to go, right, this is what we do for this weekend.
Right, so first of all, I don't think Itoje is a back row answer for anyone. As good as he is, it just didn't work. And it's not so much he's bad, but in the dynamic of that team, for instance, the line-out, there was one which was an absolute shambles.
Oh, yeah, and that was dreadful, where it hit Dan Cole on the back of the head.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say a few things, but I'm not going to start there. I'm just going to say I was really glad to see Eddie Jones stuck with Tom Wood as the open side. As we talked about last week, we were really worried about the number of players coming back from injury and that Haskell had hardly had any rugby under his belt, and Tom Wood did well in the autumn. Tom Wood was a Kvesic-esque penalty machine.
Mm. He did give a few penalties away. He worked very hard, though. He was very industrious. I'm not sure... I think the back row balance is the real question for next week.
I agree. On the flanks, because actually, Eddie Jones sort of got himself in a bit of a... got himself in a little bit of a hole by saying Chris Robshaw's not a seven.
Yeah.
And actually, Chris Robshaw is England's seven and Haskell is England's six when the two of them are on the field.
No, I don't think
Haskell,
so.
Haskell can't ball carry and Haskell can't pass. Haskell tackles.
Yeah, he can.
No, he can't.
Yeah, he can.
Well, he can, but not to international standard.
Yeah, he can.
He's like a...
He tackles.
He's more like a halfpenny passer than a Robshaw passer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh.
Robshaw, we've already described him as a link man and he's a breakdown man. Haskell is a tackler and a grafter. So, for all intents and purposes, forget what the numbers are. Just the position. Haskell acts like the traditional six, and Robshaw acts like more of the traditional seven for England when they're both in the back row.
He is a grafter, I guess.
And when Itoje and Wood are on the field, I agree with Phil. It just doesn't feel like who's doing what.
You agree with me because I said Itoje.
I agree with you. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we were all agreed on that point. Yeah.
Which is great news for Alanwyn Jones more than anyone else.
Yes.
No, it's not. It's terrible news for Alanwyn Jones.
Bad news for Hendo.
Because you can only play Itoje in the second row. Yeah.
Well, maybe that's good news for Hendo now.
Yeah,
it's good news. He's the utility guy.
Yeah, it's good news for Henderson. Yeah. It's bad news for Alanwyn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. How would you change it next week, that back row?
With the players available.
Yeah. That is the trick.
So
yeah.
I wouldn't want Marrow and Haskell for the reason I've just talked about. Then you've got kind of two. Although Marrow has got hands and skills, but he's not.
But not.
He's
no.
not a link man.
I think Haskell, Wood, and Hughes.
Hughes has to be in there.
I think Laws gets ditched.
Possibly. Yeah.
But there again, I'll tell you something else. If it's just a little swap of positions, wasn't it Laws that came onto six or seven for Tamona Harrison against Australia? Yeah,
but Itoje packed down at seven, didn't he? Laws came on.
Oh, is that
on,
right? Is that
and Laws went into the row.
I thought Laws packed down at six.
Oh. No, Itoje packed down in the back row.
No, right. That's into that.
So Jamie George comes in at hooker.
Yeah, agree.
I would agree with that. I would also bring Danny Carey in.
Yes, I would agree with you on that. Like,
is it Danny Care that you want, though? Because Danny Care seems to have had a lot of international chances. You know, they've got Young's moment, who's a bit of a retread. But why wouldn't you go a different way?
Ben isn't Spencer? It weird how we've got these few injuries?
Ben Spencer's not in the squad, so...
No, isn't it interesting?
That's the sort of guy that I'd want, rather than going back to Danny Care.
We're talking about the players who could potentially be brought in.
England's... Right, so this probably...
Why couldn't Ben Spencer be potentially brought in?
Because he's not in the squad.
Yeah, why couldn't you add him to the squad?
Right. Theoretically, you could do. There's no rule to stop you.
Okay.
Do you think that it's going to happen?
It's happened before. With injuries and
this is not injuries, is it? This is a form shift to bring someone completely outside the squad.
It could absolutely happen. Do I think it's going to happen? No. But that's what I'm doing.
Okay.
I'm doing that now.
So that's what you do.
That's what I'm doing. No, in fact, no. I'd bring in Wigglesworth. How do you like that?
I would bring in Kerr. You actually saw the last 10 minutes when Kerr came on, you saw some faster ball. And his box kicking isn't as good, but... I think that was one of the catalysts for the change, for the try. I'd also be tempted to start Jack Noel ahead of Johnny May.
Yeah.
I think everyone would be tempted to do that. Was it some personal reasons he didn't play this week?
No, well, someone mentioned he hadn't trained.
He missed a couple of days training, which could have been behind it.
But
Eddie Jones quite likes a big guy and a small guy, and Elliot Daly's stacked.
He does like a very fast guy and a work rate. That's what he's repeatedly said. He likes someone who's going to be rapid and someone who's going to work really hard, which those two clearly do.
How about someone who can kick from his own half?
That's normally helpful.
And by the way, not only kick from his own half, not just from the tee, that amazing charge down. I think Farrell kicks it, charge down. Daly, don't know what he's doing there.
Yeah.
Scoops it up, bang, see you later. Puts it right in the corner.
That was a hell of a kick.
There's a lot of Daly love.
And something else I'd be tempted with is dropping Marler. He wasn't his usual self. Obviously, he's not played for 4 weeks from coming back from a broken leg.
Who starts Loosehead for you?
That's the problem.
Yeah, you see England are creaking when you go...
But do you not want him to get under Samson Lee's skin?
Samson Lee had a bad game as well. We'll come on to that.
Yeah. Yeah, Wales have got their own problems in the front row.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Samson Levy Marler would be. I would quite like to see that as well.
But yeah, fairness. I was kind of hoping at 40 minutes, because, well, maybe even earlier, 30 minutes, Eddie Jones had done it before. I didn't think Hartley was playing well. I didn't think Marler was playing well. I didn't think Youngs was playing well. I would have liked to see
all three hooked off in 30 minutes.
Maybe that's a bit bold, 30 minutes, but. I would have liked to see a change.
To know what statistics he was looking at when he did that to Burrell and Harrison. What was like the straw that broke the camel's back 30 minutes into a test match?
Yeah. But he did the same for Tamina Harrison.
Right. Mm. There's a giant elephant in the room. Right. You've heard the phrase, hear me now, believe me later, come out of JB's mouth a number of times. Hear me now, believe me later. Sale Sharks are the best attacking team in the Premiership.
100%. Although it's taken a small blow this week. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Hear me now, believe me later. Various other things. Some of which, you know what? Fair play. I'm going to give JB the props. Way before many dissenting voices elsewhere. Hear me now, believe me later. Stuart Lancaster is not that. It cannot do anything for England.
I also called Hartley as... as captain.
So let's say for argument's sake you were 50-50 and on this one you were either
that's generous.
On this one you were you're in the casino and you're putting it all on red and I put it all on black when I said about 18 months ago or whatever it was when he was still wearing a Leinster shirt we were talking about England post World Cup 2015. And I said, do you know what? I think Ben Teo could be quite a good England player.
And you heard it from somewhere.
There was laughter. I got greeted with laughter from the chair, so I left. You laughed and then hear me now, believe me later. Ben Teo will not play for England.
Well, there was two parts to this. Ben Teo was going to be 12 and Slade was going to be 10. So you got half it right. I'll give you that. Yeah. I still think it's staggering that Ben Teo is in the England squad. You wouldn't say he was the best or one of the best 12s in England, judging by his Worcester performances. In fact,
England's best 12 isn't a 12.
No. And that goes back to the thing I say about 12s being so hard to find. Like traditional hard-running 12s can get over the game line are almost impossible to find now, which is why you've got this explosion of 10s playing 12. But no, credit where it's due. You heard it from somewhere and you repeated it. So.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
you get the credit that you deserve, Tim.
Thank you, JB. I was watching the game thinking George Ford's not having his greatest game here today. He's not marshalling this. He's not grabbing the game by the scruff of the neck like you want to tend to. Mm-hmm. Owen Farrell's the kind of guy that can do that, but when he's one further out from the breakdown, it's a little bit harder to do. So he grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck. And Bentio gave the level of physicality, which against that French team, incredibly physical team.
Do you know who I think would have made a difference? Massive team. On the weekend? I think Basterilf would have made a huge difference to one of the sides at least. because I mean, why not have that boy on the bench for the last 30 minutes?
Yeah, it was interesting. It was interesting to see that they kind of went away from the Basterilf. They went with Lamarat and Fikru, who are kind of more creative, more ball players, more elusive runners. But I thought, so I want to come back to one of the first things you said, Tim. You said that France played well, England were lucky. I actually disagree. I don't think France played well. I think certain French players played very well. Pickermans was incredible.
Serin
was okay.
He looked very predictable.
He did it.
Yeah, Serin wasn't.
There's one bit I loved that he did when he tapped the ball down for a 22, ran, sprinted out to go towards 22 looking for a drop kick, and then completely unnecessarily did a massive 40-metre reverse pass.
Yeah.
Just because he can. I loved it.
Well, so Pickermans was incredible. The back three, Spedding, who I don't particularly like, Nakatasi and Vakatawa.
All from the same village in France.
Well, so those three, given the opportunities by some very poor kicking, stupid kicking from England, those three played particularly well. But the core of the French side, the core that I was expecting would create this free-flowing attack in French rugby, and I mean Serin, Lopez, Fikou, Lamarat, they were non-existent.
Mm. Fikou in particular seems to be very... He just seems to run straight into contact.
I didn't see anything. And if those had played well, those centres and the 9 and 10, if they'd have played well to give Pickermans and the other big boppers and that back three ball...
I love that phrase, big boppers.
France could have been brilliant.
Well, Nakatasi and Vaka... Help me out here.
Vakatawa.
They seem to run across the pitch just to find each other to pass to. Yeah. They were that desperate for a creative spot.
they know the good players.
Yeah. Where's the other guy? Where's the other one? And as for Spedding, I mean, this guy has got the build...
No, sorry, say his name right.
Spedding.
He's got Spedding.
He's got the build of a low-end doorman who likes who likes a little bit too much juice.
Yeah, and a little bit of violence with it.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a feeling that in Bucharest we're going to see a lot of guys...
Who look just like Scott Spedding.
Scott Spedding, definitely. We've got some messages that are being sent in on Facebook Live. Let me go through a few of these. On the subject of England and their back row selection, whether changes should be made, another suggestion that's come in from Charlie Foxtrot, who's come up with a suggestion of someone who, again, won't be picked because he wasn't in the squad, but someone who could fill that role.
Oh, God, don't tell Phil, he'll be mental.
Mark Wilson.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him get a shot, yes, definitely.
Yeah. He won't because he's not in the squad, but there you go, just a suggestion.
It won't happen, but... Yeah.
Steve Parrott says that Eddie Jones apparently said that Noel not playing was nothing to do with non-training. It was a selection.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Paddy Irvine says, or Irvine says, the BBC are terrible as a broadcaster, going back to that conversation about who did it best. But he says, but ITV's break between the anthems and the kickoff is so incredibly crap. ITV smashes BBC in every other way. I will go for that, but I know this from radio. You pay an extra premium for the advert. So you quite often on radio, you'll get an advert, then the news bulletin, say, at whatever, midday.
Yeah.
And then there's one little 30-second advert on its own, and the advertiser pays a massive premium for that one.
It's like the Super Bowl adverts, isn't it?
Yeah.
Huge, huge. I read $5 million for 30 seconds.
It's something ridiculous, yeah.
Is that what Cornerstone pays?
We're on a similar tariff, yeah. I mean, proportionally.
Proportionally.
Yeah.
And on Facebook Live, Joe Riley also says, come on, JB, get your socks out for the lads.
Yeah, lads.
And it's been pointed out elsewhere, our kind of desert or sand-coloured boots essential rugby punditry?
I mean, you probably don't know this if you look at us in the dungeon every week, but I'm quite proud of my boot collection. These are some nice sandstone RM Williams boots.
And these are some Grenson Josephs.
In grain leather.
Grain leather, yes.
Today I'm wearing, what are they? Adidas.
Are they Gazelles?
Adidas Hamburg.
Oh, they're Hamburgs.
Black with orange.
Ooh, talking of Hamburg, if there's anybody who lives in Berlin, and knows of good places to go out and listens to this, send us message.
Just use your podcast for your own social.
Yeah, because I want to know some recommendations for bars ASAMP.
Good. Actually, should we spend the next 10 minutes just researching bars in Berlin just for your own personal trip, Jamie?
No, because I've got some Sale Sharks news to get to.
Well, maybe we can talk about it on the midweek domestic pod.
Yeah. Oh, and Jonathan Hooper on the subject of broadcasters just said, I don't mind which, I'm just happy Stuart Barnes is nowhere near the Six Nations.
Yeah.
Oh. Hear, hear. Last game of the week.
Yeah.
Wales.
Well, we were just talking about different European cities. Should we just briefly reiterate? Because this time of year, we do know that some people discover, because of an interest in the Six Nations, discover our podcast.
That is true, yes.
There's always a little bump every single year. So hello and thank you very much for downloading. This is your very first listen of the podcast, equally thank you if you've been there since day one or at any point in between. Really appreciate you listening. But we are having a little bit of an away weekend in Bucharest on the 18th, 19th, 20th of March, or 17th, 18th, 19th, that weekend.
That's correct.
The final weekend of the Six Nations, when apparently all the hype for the last few months has been... it's the Grand Slam decider.
Well, it will be the Grand Slam decider, of course.
It will be the Grand Slam decider, probably in the European Rugby Cup.
Rugby
Nations Championship.
In which Romania and Georgia are the two favourites. They have a big showdown match in Bucharest in Romania on that weekend. And because tickets, and it's so expensive, you could probably easily blow £500 travelling from England to Dublin, hotels, drinks, food, flights and the rest.
and the rest.
You could comfortably blow £500, whereas you could get a £40 return flight to Bucharest. You could get really cheap digs right in the city. You can get less than £1 or about £1 for a pint in a bar, let alone in the supermarket. You can come and see a live Egg Chasers podcast. And for £21, you could get VIP tickets for Romania versus Georgia.
Yeah, we found this out.
Not £21 for a ticket, that's £21 for VIP tickets, which include 2 hours before and after, free drinks some food in the marquee.
Yeah, and also you got to remember a bit of a update. World Rugby are following us around.
This is not just something we should throw away casually, JB. This is massive. World Rugby have heard about our trip because we have some 50 people or thereabouts who are
I think we're going to top 100 tourists.
You think?
I do, yeah. Because every day I look at it, that little number goes up, so it's about 47. But the number which I'm really interested in is how many people other people are inviting onto the Facebook event. So that's how we're monitoring it. So we've got 47 people booked on already.
That's who've confirmed on the Facebook group that they are attending.
Correct.
But they're likely to bring, like you say, a couple. They'll be coming.
Well,
in groups.
Because of the venue size. I mean, the numbers are no problem, but you're going to have to be on the Facebook group for a list because, you know, for obvious reasons, we can't have 800 people. Not we're going to get 800 people, but we couldn't have that.
But isn't it unbelievable that we're talking about, what, a few thousand miles away and we're talking about having 100 people from England travelling over for a weekend to go and watch Romania v Georgia? That got the attention of World Rugby, who obviously want to try and develop tier two competition. They heard that we were doing it. They love that we're doing it and having a live podcast. And they've said they're sending a film crew to document our weekend in Bucharest.
Yeah, so if you want to be documented on the World Rugby Show and come to the live podcast, which no pressure because we've done loads of these live podcasts.
Free live podcasts.
Oh, no, wait, the other thing, we've done no live podcasts. So, yeah, it's going to be tricky, but it will be fine.
But it will be free and for a significantly smaller amount of money than you would spend going to the Grand Slam decider there. You can see an actual tournament decider in the Rugby Nation European Nations Cup.
Yeah, it's going to be one hell of a game.
What were the results of the Rugby Nations Cup Week 1?
It doesn't kick off till next week.
And Georgia face Belgium. Yes. So that'll be about as competitive as when Belgium faced Germany in 1939.
Well, they gave up a spirited resistance for a bit. Yeah. And then, got rolled over.
So they only have one rest week, which makes it an even better tournament.
Yeah.
Don't you hate the Six Nations? There's two rest weeks. Third week and then the week, you have 1 week.
I'd hate that games. If I was a French player, because you have to go back and play top 14.
Well, so historically they do, but this season, none of the French, because the top 14 was on last weekend, and none of the French players appeared to have played in the top 14.
First time ever.
Yeah, I think they're actually slowly getting to grips with this professionalism.
Yes, well, I actually spoke to Philippe Saint-André last week. He's on the Rugby Dungeon, and he'll explain exactly why that is.
Very good.
There you go.
It's rather high profile.
Outstanding
conversation.
It's kind of a big deal.
Oh, just one thing while we're on Romania, Georgia, the new kit.
Oh. Goodness.
I almost want to get the Brokeback Mountain music out again for that Georgia.
Please don't.
Do you know what? The simple thing, if you haven't seen it, Canterbury unveiled the Georgia jersey, and it is a thing of beauty. It's like a deep red wine, burgundy almost colour.
It's like the Arsenal centenary kit. It's that colour.
Yeah.
The red currants.
And that Arsenal kit had gold. But I think the one thing, and it's something for teams to think about, is gold is what the detail and the Canterbury logo and the Georgia emblem and the little detail is in gold. It looks great with the burgundy. But what's great is when the sponsor logo is in that same colour.
Yes, well said,
Tim. It makes a massive difference.
And do you know who really messes up with a sponsor colour and their kit? They're the worst offenders of this, maybe in the world. The world of rugby.
Go on.
Does anyone know? Gloucester. Because they've got the red and... So they've got two problems. They've got the cherry and white.
Yeah.
Mitsubishi is
that's not a problem, is
no,
it?
No, that's it. It's marvellous.
Cherry and white, red and white hoops. It's a beautiful thing.
But then they've got to put a big white patch in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And it's got to be the same colour palette red as the stripes. It just doesn't work. So now they should do what we're saying and do Mitsubishi all in black. But unfortunately, I think Mitsubishi's branding is actually a red sign.
Yeah.
You can't get around that. Mm. Anyway.
I think that would be enough to just give up the millions of pounds that they pump into Gloucester, to be honest.
Yeah, just
on,
black
on a matter of principle.
Yeah, just do it in black. It'd be absolutely fine. But an exceptional kit.
It really is a beautiful thing. I wouldn't mind. I was just assuming we'd support the home team, Romania, but maybe we'll be with the travelling. Maybe as we're travelling, we'll be...
Who makes Romania's kit? Is it BLK?
Would we be more likely to get a free beer or two from the Romanian International or Romanian Rugby Union if we're...
I think we should do... I'm going to buy a Romanian tie. I'm going to buy a Mighty Oaks tie.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, it would be cool. Anyway, should we talk about the Six Nations?
Yes.
We've got one more game to do.
Yeah, let's do that. How do you feel, JB, at Wales top of the table? Take a snapshot of that. Might not last long.
Indifferent, really. Yeah, I mean, I didn't hold up much hope for Wales this the Six Nations. In fact, I've picked them fifth out of six. And today, first half in particular, showed me why. There have been, I think, steps by Rob Howley. Now, whether he actually wants to do this, you know, organically, or whether he thinks it's the right thing to do, because the media are talking about bringing Scott Williams, bringing Tipperick. The latest one is going
to
be...
You mean Gatland's not just telling him what to do from a phone, from afar?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, Gatland probably wrote him a list of things of, like, what to do and how to do it. And I bet you the one thing Gatland didn't write, because he never thought he'd need it, was what do you do if you're down half-time against Italy? So, Gatland can only help him so much. The first half, I couldn't honestly see how Wales would win it. They offered nothing. They had a lot of possession. They didn't manage to score with that possession. It wasn't for the fact that Lee Halfpenny, you know, is an exceptional kicker. you know, there was just nothing there. There was no spark. There was just nothing.
Are Wales the worst team 5 metres out from an opposition try line?
They're certainly not the best.
Absolutely clueless. They just...
Yeah, they're not Exeter, that's for sure.
No.
And, you know, it is the hardest place to score from, but, you've got... You know, these are the areas where the good teams score. Look at people like Saracens, they just tighten up. Look at people like Exeter, like I mentioned before.
Toulon when they were good.
Toulon, yeah.
Yeah, when they were good. Toulon a couple of seasons ago, let's say that.
You've just got to plough over. Pretty disappointing. I think second half they did better. Maybe Sam Davis did help with that.
Yeah, I was very interested to get your take on that, actually. Because it did look like they were... Whether it was a decision was made tactically and it would have happened regardless of who was on the field, but it did look like they opened up a bit more when Sam Davis came on.
Yeah, well, okay, so Sam Davis is a very talented player by all accounts.
Yeah.
I haven't seen an awful lot of him because I don't watch very much Pro 12. He does play flatter than bigger, which isn't necessarily a huge advantage, but he does, which leads me to think if they were going to pair up with someone... I actually think Roberts might be a better option because he can play so flat to that game line where Jamie Roberts is really good.
Because you've got that out of Jamie Roberts.
Exactly. Whereas if you are playing with Scott Williams, who wants to do a little bit of creating himself.
Yeah.
I'm going to just like head this one off at the pass because I don't think you throw a young guy like that in against England in a big, big game. And secondly, I think we should stop short of making any longer term judgments based on the last 20, 30 minutes of an Italy team who always ran out of gas.
Yeah, well, I think...
Yeah, they were always going to run out
so
of gas.
So he did... Yeah, you're absolutely right. He did make an impact, and I'm not saying that that's not the case, but...
I think the overall judgment was actually for the first 40, not the last 20. And that's what's got... I think that's the most disappointing thing.
Yeah.
There again, Tim. There was a young man who only had a handful of test starts before going out and pumping... England for Wales, and that was Dan Biggar himself about 4 years ago.
Yeah,
I think he had something like 10 caps. So
I've just remembered how unbelievably smug you were that night.
Oh yeah.
I was linking back to something you mentioned. I was actually in Berlin on that night, the 30 points to 3 game. Terrible, dreadful.
That was dreadful. ITV did a really honest piece before the match with George North, who spoke very honestly about the whole concussion system. Basically, he was saying, yeah, I know if it happens again. He was kind of sort of saying, if it happens a number of times, people will start telling him he should stop playing. He said it, but it's my, you know.
Exactly. It's his decision. It gives him a phenomenal lifestyle. Leave the boy alone.
Did either of you know when he scored that try and he kind of rolled over onto his knees and put his head in his hands?
Yeah.
Did either of you think, oh my God, a blood vessel's just burst in his brain?
Yeah, I did breathe. I did think there's something wrong. And then he started rubbing his leg, and he thought, all right, okay, he's covered. He's been taught now.
Yeah.
When you have a head issue, rub your leg.
Or your neck.
or your neck.
Anything but the head.
But ITV said, I can't remember who said it, but one of them said, Wales seem to be addressing the concussion issue head on. Which was quite good. They also said in commentary, or one of the pundits did, Conor O'Shea will be pulling his hair out. Again, it's like trying to shut the stable door after the horse.
One got into a horrible mess. Like, if Conor O'Shea does well with Italy, he might become an internet. He might become maybe the Irish coach.
Yeah.
But yeah, he is an international coach.
Yeah.
Oh, no, a real international coach.
Right. There were some things I loved about this game, some things I didn't love. Let's just talk about that first half from Sergio.
I'm sorry, Sergio.
Thank you, Italy, for pizza. Thank you for pasta. Thank you for prosciutto. And thank you for Parise.
Mm.
Oh, my word. Who's looking forward to Parise v Pick'emalls already?
Oh.
That showdown.
Parise, I am sorry.
Yeah, we got it completely wrong on this.
Well, we didn't say...
No,
I did.
But JB, I'm going to defend you slightly because you weren't predicting that he would have be the villain of the tournament. You were saying how many more times can he keep going back to the well and dragging his team up by the bootstraps on his own?
He was class.
We were
today
speculating whether he was done. We've now confirmed he is very much not done.
So here's the thing, right? If you've got a bit of spare salary cap or a marquee place, go and get him, because this is the one chance you'll have. That Stade Francais team is going down the pan big time. It's lost a ton of stars. Parise himself had been suspended for bad attitude. They prefer their South African Jono Ross. Go and get... This is a plea to all teams in the Aviva and Pro 12, if you're listening. You know, you can act on this if you want. Go and get him.
Oh, I
there
agree.
Is never a better time.
I agree.
Yep. Never.
Please. There should be a statue in Rome put up of this guy as well. So life size, so, you know, 15 foot.
At least.
And and obviously, you know, only like all the traditional statues, naked, obviously.
Yeah. Very, very good.
When he was beating the fullback, when he was beating Lee Halfpenny in the air to collect high balls.
When he was running and giving that filthy little no look
Why don't I do that more often? That's what I was thinking.
On the flip side, there was an element where Welsh players, the cringy try celebration.
Right,
Liam Williams and
JD2.
Now you're down with the kids more than me. You're in radio.
What's going on with this?
What, what is it? Can
salt,
you tell me?
Salt Bay.
He's sprinkling salt. I didn't know it was called Salt Bay.
What is Salt Bay? What does Bay mean?
B A E.
What does that mean? Is it a weapons manufacturer?
It's like your baby, like your honey.
See, B A E to me means weapons.
So he's basically you're basically going. My honey's a nice piece of steak. Is that what you're going?
Something
a bit of rump. And I'm sprinkling salt on you.
It's some stupid video, some meme of a guy slicing up a piece of steak and then he sprinkles salt by like this really kind of camp thing. Yeah. Sprinkle it onto his forearm so it bounces off his forearm onto the steak.
Why?
I can't believe you've never seen this.
And that's
why would I see it? At what point would between the multiple podcasts or giving financial advice? I mean, when would I get to see Salt Bay?
You're one of the most active people I've ever seen on Twitter.
Never heard of it.
Only when questioned.
Yeah, but only. I'm only tweeting about me. I'm not reading what other people have got to say.
So anyway, so now you know the origin of Salt Bay, and. You know, some people don't like Owen Farrell doing his. You're watching it.
I'm watching Salt Bay now.
Okay, so some people knock Owen Farrell for thinking he's doing some sort of like, I'm so cool thing. But his is a charity.
Not interested.
Of someone that a friend of the family.
Joining Jack.
Yeah, it's a friend of the family who is affected by this disease, and that's why he does it every time. It's quite a nice, touching.
What's the charity?
What's it called?
I'm sure it's Joining
not, not,
Jack.
Not just Jack, is it?
Or it might be just Jack or Joining Jack.
I'm not sure which one it is, but anyway, that's why Owen Farrell does that every time he scores a kick, which is I think is quite a nice thing. But this Salt Bay thing, do one.
Oh, it's a Turkish butcher. Fancy that. Hot Turkish butcher.
There you go.
So the Welsh players are cringy memers.
And Reece Webb, you mentioned this on Twitter, Tim.
Oh, my God.
Reece Webb. Mouthing off.
I mean, it's part of a nine's job description. Don't get me wrong. To be chopsy and to be annoying.
There's one thing about being chopsy, but there's one. It's a completely different one to be continually mouthing off to the referee, and appealing. It's not the mouthing off. It's the appealing. Please, sir. Come on, sir. Come on. Look at this.
Oh, sir, he's offside. Sir, he's got hands on. Off, yeah. Sir.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, it is annoying.
So he did it so much that he got a warning. In fact, he got a couple of warnings in the first half. I loved it, and I praised JP Doyle on Twitter for it, for saying, Alan, tell your nine to zip it. I thought, awesome, JP Doyle, brilliant. He's going to nip this one in the bud. And then, thanks to the wonderful coverage of ITV, we got really loud, close-in ref mic as Reece Webb ran past JP Doyle. We got a very, very loud... Fucking hell, ref!
Yeah. I have no problem, right, with the nine saying, you know, he's not rolling or whatever. I mean, because there is an element of... Oh, there we are, Salt Bay. I'm just really kidding that. Very good. Because part of the nine's job is not just to describe to the ref, but also to all the other players. And if an opposition player has got his hands on the ball and hear someone say, hands away.
Yeah.
He's more like...
He's not going hands away. He's got both arms up in the air appealing like a footballer. Ref!
Yeah. Okay, so he should be sent off, not for the swearing, because everyone swears. It's sir. It isn't ref. It's not been ref for generations.
Get out, ref!
It's sir.
Yeah.
So, sir. Oh, sorry. Excuse me. Effing hell, sir, is fine. Effing hell, ref, not so
unacceptable.
Good. Unacceptable.
After he'd been warned, and then our lovely Sergio gets penalised for it.
Oh,
later on.
Can we just rewind a little bit? We've not really spoke about the refs yet.
Oh, I'm happy to talk about the refs. Yeah, I praised JP Doyle in the first half of Wales Italy on Twitter because I thought he actually let the boys play and he nipped things in the bud and he didn't take any crap. And
so, I liked how he dealt with Sergio.
Tell Rhys Webb zip it, and he did all that. But the second half, he was just the law interpretations of that Moriarty tackle, and there was another couple of tackles across the weekend like this, hard dominant tackles, and I'm fine about the landing on neck, landing on head. I'm fine. Yep. I've dealt with it and gone through it with the when players are lifted beyond the horizontal. But that tackle on Ross Moriarty where he landed on his back, he did not land on his neck or shoulders, and he was never taken beyond the horizontal, and he was penalised. And basically, dominant tackles are, you're risking getting penalised if you tackle too hard.
Well, it was two instances of the same thing which happened this weekend, which really annoyed me.
The other one on this was Johnny May's tackle, where, for me, the Johnny May Fiku and the Ross Moriarty one were the same, because it shouldn't be judged at how high your legs go in the air. Legs can go beyond the horizontal, it's completely irrelevant, but your upper body from your hips to your shoulders, providing that stays horizontal and you land on the flat of your back, there should not be any issue at all with that kind of tackle.
I think a coaching point, don't lift. Just don't lift.
But sometimes you do.
Well, sometimes, as was pointed out, that Johnny May was like pulling the legs towards him. He wasn't lifting. Anyway, there's a couple of occasions where you just think, God, and I'm just imagining how this comes to it. It's either little focus group sessions or sessions that the referees have where the law diktats get passed down, or it's the assessor in the stands who tells them off when they don't. It's just wrong. And Nigel Owens was on Desert Island Discs, a show I know you love, JB.
I hate it with a passion.
But he was on Desert Island Discs, and he said that the key to successful refereeing is empathy. And he said it's not about knowing when to blow the whistle, it's about knowing when not to blow the whistle.
Oh, that's nice. There was one area, right? Twice it happened. Yep. Do you know what I'm about to say?
I know exactly what you're about to say.
Do you know what I'm about to say? The ref let the ball come out.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going for a different one.
No. So the ref, JP Doyle, did it, and also the other fella in the England game did it. And
The Australian?
Yeah.
He goes up at the end of every sentence?
And then
Angus Gardner?
So the ball has come out the back of the ruck, and they're almost encouraging the players to go for it. Go on.
Out.
Go on.
Out.
Yeah. Go on. Penalty. It's like they want to give that penalty.
I know.
These players aren't stupid. If they are reading the official's body language, as am I, I'm looking at that official thinking, he wants that player to pick up that ball because it's out, which is why they do it. And then they blow for the penalty.
No, well, there is a law, because I had a bit of a moan on Twitter at Angus Gardner with it just feels petty and pernickety, and let the boys play, let's get on and just get on, let's just play the game. Mm. I don't want to hear your whistle. And I said, oh yeah, because Angus Gardner said, he went, ball out. Two players fumbled around with it on the ball. Then an England player dives in on the ball. Penalty.
Yeah, got no idea.
Yeah, he said the words he used were the ball was emerging from the ruck.
The ball was emerging for the ruck.
He had already said out.
Yeah,
he
agreed.
Clearly said
and
out.
And his body language is almost like, "Come and get it, boys, come."
Yeah,
come. Yeah.
But
there is a law that you can't dive on a ball emerging from a ruck. Which
16.4E.
When you have stuff that specific in a law book, is it any wonder we have petty laws that fans don't understand?
I think they need to completely do away with that because, so it's like being pregnant. You either are pregnant or you are not pregnant. The ball is in the ruck or the ball is not in the ruck. If it's in the ruck, leave it alone. If it's out of the ruck, fair play. Do whatever you want. Open field. That law should not be.
It's crazy.
But isn't the answer for the ref to say, don't touch it, you can touch it? Because a lot of refs will talk you through it. Like, it's out.
Sometimes when you're standing on the fridge, you go, sir, is it out? Yeah, ball out. And you'll...
But, okay, here, ref. Don't look at them. Don't look at them, like, in the eyes. Like, come on, get it.
Yeah.
Here it is. It's ready for you.
It's like entrapment, isn't it?
It's out. Oh, no. No, it's not out. Come and get it.
So I am going to say, is there any wonder... I think there is a correlation between the fact... I'm not blaming the referees for poor performances of teams. I don't want to go down that line, but I'm saying it definitely contributes. And I would praise Romain Poit. I thought he had an excellent game, Ireland versus Scotland. What a great spectacle that was.
What great hair.
Yeah.
Roman, what is happening to your hair?
Talking about what is happening to the hair, is it just because Alan Wynne-Jones is like 20 stone and 6 foot six that no one has the bottle to say comb overs don't look good, mate?
Whip it off.
I think they look great on Alan Wynne-Jones. I've got a question for you.
But no, so Roman Pwett was great. Angus Gardner and, well, JP Doyle, good first half, really poor second half, I felt. And again, I don't want to get into this, but Angus Gardner particularly, oh my word, the teams didn't play well. He
didn't do well.
He sunk it to lower levels.
Right.
And that,
I was expecting Angus Gardner. You know when, so the players were actually complaining because he said, emerging rook. And someone started to say, you'd already said it was out. I was expecting him to say, yeah, but I had my fingers crossed. You didn't check I had my fingers crossed, guys.
Yeah.
You didn't ask. Yeah. Right, so I've got a question for you, Tim.
Yeah.
Can you name me a player, any player, who's had an international appearance, just one, been found out to be completely out of his depth and then been dropped?
There are a few players who've had one.
There's a few players who've done that and then dropped way down the rank, like Tamana Harrison, 30 minutes against Australia, Matthew Tate in the Millennium Stadium on his debut.
Okay. So let me back this up with another question, right? Has there ever been a case of a referee being promoted to international level and then just disappeared because he's not up to it? And if not, why not?
I think if an international coach is worth their salt, you should know. It's like when people say in business, getting the sack should never be a surprise. Because if it's never a surprise and you haven't communicated well enough beforehand, if you promote a player above his station, well,
it's not really about the player, though, is it? It's about the refs. Why don't we have like a graveyard of refs who got to the international level? And thought, ooh, well, this isn't for you, and then sent them back down again.
Well, I'd say if that was the case, it's the fault of the people that have put them there. But which is why I don't think it happens.
They're all players who legitimately come up and think, yeah, sorry, that wasn't really fair to put you there, and then you never see him again. And I think it's the same with refs.
Angus Gardner?
I'm not going to be that cruel.
No, I wouldn't say that.
No, I'm not going to be that cruel and say I never want to see Angus Gardner ever again, dead or alive.
Absolutely. But, he'll learn a lot from it, I'm sure. He wasn't assertive enough.
But it is weird that there are no refs that have ever been found out just not to be good enough.
Well, the beautiful thing about refs is when it's done well, you don't talk about them.
Yeah.
You don't mention them.
Yeah.
I want a law change as well for the refs. I don't want to hear their opinions or their jokes when they're reffing. I want them to be more stoic.
I also don't want them to use nicknames of players.
Yeah,
I heard
absolutely
that a few
not.
Times over the
In
weekend.
In fact, maybe they should go back to either the number or Mr. Someone.
Mr. I'd like Mr.
Yeah. That's
Mr.
Cool.
Hartley, come here immediately, please.
Yeah. No, I'd like that a lot. Did you see Austin Healey's tweet before the Wales half-time Wales,
yeah.
Italy? Master troll on Twitter. He just said, how good is this battle for the wooden spoon?
Yeah, wooden spoon decider.
It's okay, but I'm sure that he recycles that tweet every Six Nations. It's probably in his drafts, isn't it?
To Lupe Falatau's boots were not filled at number eight. That was one of the big losses for Wales.
That was interesting. I was hoping Moriarty would step up, but he was largely anonymous.
Yeah, but he doesn't play eight for Gloucester either, to be fair. He's more of a combative six than anything else.
But he's putting... If you're wearing the shirt, you've got to step up.
Yeah, agreed.
Do you know how many metres he made? How many carries he made?
I'm going to say five carries, 25 yards.
Four carries, 3 yards.
You're almost spot on, Tim.
Wow.
Six carries, 3 yards.
Wow.
Good.
Compared to... Parise made more than 60.
There again.
Pickermall's made 130. Nathan Hughes made 40 odd.
Are these Opta stats, though? Bearing in mind we've met the guys from Opta and we know how the sausage is made.
I'd still trust them to be not to be wrong by a factor of 10.
Yes.
We talked about England's lack of a link man. Tipperick as a link man. Love him. And when the game got loose.
Tipperick's good.
Yeah.
Tipperick is very good.
He's very good. We were talking about the refereeing and stuff, and you mentioned Moriarty. Going back to that tackle on Moriarty, the one thing that probably concerned me as much as anything, again, I don't want to see that ever be penalised ever, and it was. But what we're now finding is, and this is where this whole thing that I was talking about, JB said, oh, the ship will right itself, it's gone too far and it will right itself. What you're hearing now from pundits, and this almost made me want Brian Moore back just for that 30 seconds. So he could
nothing makes you want Brian Moore back.
No, I know. Just for this particular moment, I wanted Brian Moore back to go, that's ridiculous, because there is no one making that noise now. It's almost like you have to say this, everyone.
Groupthink.
It's like a tacit agreement. So the phrase that was said after that Moriarty thing was, oh, that's the right decision. That's part of the game now.
Yeah. I was very surprised by the pundits' reaction to that. And it's like they had to toe the line. They didn't want to disagree with the referee.
Mm.
It's like anything in this whole head area law change, you're not allowed to knock it anymore. If you're a pundit, like, can we just pipe that? Just stop. Don't have an opinion that isn't. So, and maybe that's how they honestly feel, and maybe we're the ones on. Maybe we're the outsiders.
You know,
you
do get bored. I mean, I've been fighting this battle for years, and now I'm just bored. You know, there's only so much you can rant and rave, and you realise nothing gets changed. So you just go, yeah, that is the game.
Yeah.
Let's move on and enjoy what's left of this, you know, decrepit corpse.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you what we should do.
Predictions?
Yeah,
And then the MWDP?
Let's do our sort of Lions watch list. So Lions watch.
Not going through the whole team, no.
But just basically picking out a few people that have really enhanced their case, or a few people that are dropping. Imagine them like stocks, you know, you're in investments. Imagine them like stocks and shares. We're buying Stuart Hogg.
Yeah. I think I've got how stocks and shares work. Okay.
Yeah, okay, cool. Well, I don't, so maybe you can help me out. We're buying a load of Stuart Hogg. He's like...
Yeah. Hogg is, for me, nailed on starter at 15.
Completely. Nailed on. He's got a seat on the plane in one of the economy seats, because he doesn't need much leg room. Save a few quid on him as well.
So, risers are going to be... And now, do they have to be considered... Hang on. Do we have to have them like semi on the plane anyway?
No. I think we do it solely judging this 80 minutes. You know how you do your thing every week, where all of a sudden you're a massive Tim Swinson fan.
Yeah. Okay, so he's up.
So you know how you watch one game and make a broad general judgment on a player. Let's do that. JB Lions.
What have you done for me lately, Lions team?
Yes, exactly.
All right. I think I'm going to be good at this. So, so not Tim Swinson.
Some of the downs. I'm going to say we were talking about him as a potential member of the squad, and his loose play is outstanding. But Xander Fagerson showed that he's got big question mark over scrummaging at international level.
Yep.
Yes. And the two men opposite him McGrath and Ty Furlong.
Outstanding.
Rising stars. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm going to have one who is going to go down, but only marginally, I think.
In fact, let's do that. Let's just do like we'll go around the room quickly and say one up, one down, whatever you want to do.
Still going, probably still start, but the shine has gone a little bit off Conor Murray this week.
Okay.
Sticking with that theme, Ben Youngs. Yep. I thought he had an awful game.
Yep.
Ben Youngs only has two types of games: world class or
national
dreadful.
National two.
Yes. Yeah. And, yeah.
I would say going down the other England halfback, George Ford. It'll be a very, very physical New Zealand side, and territorial game management and just grabbing games by the scruff of neck is going to be essential for a 10, which is... So George Ford, if he plays like that in the rest of the Six Nations, I don't think he'll make the tour.
I'll have one going up now, which obviously makes sense. It's got to be Greg Laidlaw.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is worrying.
And sticking with the scrum halves, there's a lot of movement in the scrum halves. Reece Webb did not have a good game.
I still think he's kind of nailed on to be second, though.
Oh, I think, Ignoring everything gone before, this game he did not play well.
No, but I mean, if you ranked the four scrum halves this week, he's still second, right? Just on this week's performance.
No, Laidlaw, Murray, Webb, Youngs, probably for me.
Any more going ups?
You've picked
the ones that I've written
down. There's one more for me. Elliot Daly.
Yeah, Elliot Daly had a great game.
And that's where I'm going to leave it.
Hmm. Anyone else? No other significant movers, I'd say.
No, not significant.
You could mention Seymour, although he did have a bit of a quiet game by his standards, and you could mention Johnny Gray, but again, a bit of a quiet game by his standards.
Yeah.
What are the games next week?
Yeah, so just on that one, that Lions watch, as you're watching the games in the Six Nations in round two, fire your completely instant,
yes,
reactive, JB-esque opinions to us at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, and we can include them in our Lions watch. So yeah, just be as reactive and unthought through as considered as you possibly can. Just instant.
One of our friends loves Jack Noel. So during that game, every time Elliot Daly did something good, I was saying, Jack Noel who? get rid of Jack Noel. And then every time, like the one or two occasions that Daly made a mistake, get Jack Noel on.
Exactly. Jack Noel ahead of May. Because
yeah, probably.
I honestly think Daly's going to be a world superstar by the time that Lions comes about.
Right. Next week's fixtures.
Yep.
Saturday, 2:25, Italy host Ireland.
It's going to be horrible for Italy, I think.
Italy host Ireland?
Yeah.
That's what I've got in front of me.
Italy have two home games on the bounce.
That's correct.
I suppose they've got five games. They've got five.
Yeah, that's what I've got in front of me.
Yeah, no, I'm not doubting it.
I think it's going to be a really nasty, long day in the office. Conor O'Shea is going to come and stuck big time.
You know how... So when the All Blacks lost to Ireland, the following week they played Italy and they put 70-odd points on them.
I think it might be like that.
I think it won't be 70 points, but I think there will be a backlash.
I think, I'm going to say Ireland are going to score 40 points here.
Yeah. Given the way that Wales opened up in that second half, yeah, I can see that.
Tim, any advances on that?
No.
Good. Next.
The big one. Wales host England.
Right, let's very quickly... just do I know JB hates any kind of 15.
Oh no!
Quickly, like a combined 15. If you just were selecting based on the 30 or whatever guys that will be we expect to possibly be starting, who would you go with? Because is there any who in the Welsh front row gets in? I don't know if anyone does.
One of the hookers. The hookers are good.
Yeah, Hartley didn't have a great game. I'd probably start Jamie George over Hartley.
Yeah. So England maybe have an edge there.
Yep.
Albeit they didn't look totally, but they'll be solid anyway.
Yeah.
I'm going to head this off. Wales are going to get hammered.
You reckon?
It's not going to be close.
Really?
I really think that.
Did you see anything from the England performance that suggests that?
No, yeah, that's a good point.
Because here's the thing. In the pack, on the current side, I would pick only Nathan Hughes and Maro Itoje in second row out of the back five of the scrum. And I think that back row could be really, really important.
No. Yeah,
even
I'm with you on that.
Even with Haskell back in, I'd rather have Tipperick or Warburton over him.
Good teams carry on winning because it's a habit, and bad teams carry on losing. And I don't think this is the remnants of a team that used to be good. I think they've got old. I think they've got a bit stale and complacent.
I'm not trying to
style of play, and that's where it's going to be lost.
I'm not saying I think Wales are going to necessarily win, but I think. I can't get over the difference England with the Vunipolas and England without the Vunipolas. It is
a different team. Maybe it does take a little bit of time to settle. You know, if you've not got that, got those two absolute beasts. I mean, they will get over that eventually.
It will be, ironically,
the two Welsh bred Vunipolas.
Well, I mean, this isn't any old game though. You understand that, right? It's got special significance, no?
Has it?
Yeah.
What is DJ Spoonie coming back to DJ before the match?
Bigger. It's a huge game. I can't believe that neither of you know this.
It's a Friday night game?
Nope.
No. Saturday afternoon. Afternoon, evening.
Oh my God, the winner of this, if there is a winner, and there should be a winner, will be the current JB Cup holder.
Oh, because Wales on three or four wins?
Four wins.
England on 15?
Yes. So if England had a loss to France,
yeah,
that once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, that very rare opportunity for the JB Cup, would have been held jointly by Ireland, Scotland and Wales. So, whoever wins this one, it's JB Cup time.
The most confusing cup to explain.
Well, it's not. It's quite easy to explain. The problem is working out, having to work out, having to look through every other team's current win streak to work out who's going to take it next.
All right.
It's a unique trophy.
So, just to go back, I would probably pick four Englishmen, four Welshmen in the pack. It's quite even there. Mm. Half back, I'd probably go for Rhys Webb reluctantly. I don't think. Well, no, he's clearly better than Ben Youngs.
Which Ben Youngs though? Because Ben Youngs on a good day is world class. He's outstanding.
Mm. But national two Ben Youngs.
If you had to combine these teams and play a game against someone for the fate of Earth, you would go for Rhys Webb as
Rhys Webb at full form.
It's not going to be about the talent, of the individuals. No. It's going to be about the team itself. So you are right to say you would split the team, I don't know, 50-50.
Well, what I was going to suggest was which member of the Wales backline, other than Rhys Webb, would get near that England team? Because I think this could be where the game is won and lost. Liam Williams probably. You would be one of the wingers instead of Johnny May, or even instead of Mike Brown. But then the rest of England, like George North looked good again today.
He scored a good try. I don't think he looked good.
No, I don't either. George North he's starting to look soft. I hate to say it. Like some of the things he does in defence, he doesn't seem to put it in as much as he used to. I mean, the George North that went in on the last Lions tour was, you know, suplexing people. That guy's gone, and now you kind of see glimpses there, you know, now and again.
His quads look every bit as good as they did in that last Lions tour. I will
say
that.
Just not the player he was.
Which is a shame, but if we were picking for the fate of Earth, I don't think I'd select George North. So it just
he wouldn't be on the plane for me based on his current form.
So I think that England midfield is going to be where it's won. And Jonathan Joseph loves playing against Wales.
Yes,
he's had some big games against Wales.
He has. Yeah, I think this will be extremely uncomfortable for Wales. Mind you, they are at home. So
they are at home.
Yeah,
that helps.
Yeah, definitely.
But they've
been
hammered. I mean, the England game when this time last year was, it only got close towards the end.
Yeah, for 60 minutes it was one way traffic.
But the one they played before they went on tour, it was savage. It was absolutely savage.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be closer than you think, because I look at it and England don't have go forward with ball in hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Without the two Vunipolas, and England don't have a really in-form firing George Ford.
Well, both those two things, is that a reason to play BBT, Big Ben Teal? It solves both those problems.
Yeah, maybe it is.
So I'm saying England, you're saying...
I am very worried as an England fan.
I am.
But I hope we should have enough to win.
Tim?
I think England will win, but I think we might have to win ugly again.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be pretty.
Where is Scotland playing France?
In France. Give me Scotland.
Well, Scotland are good in Paris. They've had lots of famous victories in Paris.
And Glasgow obviously went to Racing.
Yeah,
that's the one I'm thinking about.
There'll be no worry. There'll be no fears.
They're quite
from
easy
that team
to kind of track Scotland, aren't they? I mean, no one picked the win against Ireland, did they? But we all said they're going to be competitive. And why did we say that? Because we saw how Glasgow did against Munster. They played three times. I think the Racing game is a great indication.
Yeah. Weren't Edinburgh also in the same group as Stade Francais in the...
Yes, they were. And NSI... Not NSI, and Bucharest Saracens, or whatever they're called.
Timisoara's.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Hmm. Mm.
Indeed.
Scotland?
Give me Scotland.
Tim?
France.
And do you know what? I think they're best equipped to beat France because, of course, Vernon Cotter's got so much experience there.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, excellent. Right, shall we wrap this up and then do the MWDP?
Well, we'll do that on Tuesday.
We'll do that another time.
Do that another
time. Closer to the time, yeah.
Do that on Tuesday to release on Wednesday morning.
Great idea.
The midweek domestic pod. During the Six Nations, we'll have two podcasts per week to make sure you get your full fill of rugby. So if you just hit subscribe, then we'll make sure every single one is delivered straight to you. You don't have to keep checking back. And leave your review in the meantime. Leave your thoughts, Facebook, Twitter. Get involved in the trip to Romania if you're free, 18th, 19th of March, and you want to come over, get involved in a free podcast. Go and buy as many £1 maximum beers in a bar in Bucharest as you want. And there, yeah, come along for the fun there. Get your Cornerstone Razor and top work.
Excellent. Well, I guess we'll see you all on Thursday or Tuesday or whenever.
I'll see you in a couple of days.
Tuesday.
Right. In a bit.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.